You call that radio?
Good afternoon, Troubadours. It's season four. It's episode 11, I think. I'm not checked. But, yeah, we're rattling through them every Sunday. If this comes out on Sunday, that is. I'm recording this and it's Friday night. And I'm getting ready for a party in Edinburgh. We're going to be running an all-day party as an alternative to the Edinburgh Fringe. Sound system, artists, DJs, bands, acoustic acts, poets. It's free. It's bring your own bottle. And it's at the Meadows in Edinburgh. But by the time you listen to this, it will already have happened. So if you did go, then I hope you enjoyed it. If you didn't go, I'm sorry. I didn't tell you about it sooner. It was all kind of last minute. It's been a crazy week or two. It's been a crazy week or two for everyone. The news is wild, man. England, I was going to say the UK, but it's England and parts of Northern Ireland are on fire with all the UK riots. I don't want to talk about that too much because every time I do topical news stuff, then you listen back to it and it's nothing to do with the interview. But I have did a full 20-minute rant about the racist riots that have been happening over the last week or two in England, in Northern Ireland. Fingers crossed it doesn't get any traction in Scotland. So far, so good up here, but yeah, it could happen anywhere. It could happen anywhere. But anyway, if you want to hear my thoughts on that, go to youtube.com/ you call that radio. And I've got a wee rant on there about it all. 20 minutes of me just ranting. So if you want to hear my thoughts, go to that. But yeah, as well as all of that, it was a busy week for us. We did my band Gyro Babies played St Luke's, which is like an old church in the east end of Glasgow, and it was a magical night. I really enjoyed it. Hens were brilliant, the Twist Dates were brilliant. Just I can't list everybody that played, but it was over two rooms. The sun was shining, and it was a good time. But if you missed it, thanks if you came. If you didn't go, then the good news is that we're actually going to stream the entire gig. When are we going to stream it? We're streaming it this Friday. Friday the 16th at 8 o'clock. We're going to stream it on patreon.com/ you call that radio. And I feel it because I'm just sharing it with friends, people who are on the Patreon, that I'm not going to bother editing out the mistakes or just picking the best songs. There's also four new songs on it from the new album, so I was trying to keep that under wraps, but I'd actually quite like people's feedback before we finalise the album version. So, yeah, as a thank you for being a patron, you can watch that on patreon.com/ you call that radio. And if you're not already a patron member, you can sign up. It's £3 a month. You can cancel after you've watched it if you're that way inclined. But it's a good time to sign up because we're also giving away half-price tickets to Lindisfarne Festival. We've got 30% off Part of the Palace tickets. We have, I think it's 10 or 20% off Equinox Festival. And we have some information about a couple of private parties we're having in September just to milk the rest of festival season. So there'll be one September the 7th, Saturday, September 7th, for you call that radio patrons. We're going to have some bands, some DJs, and probably just about, keep it to about 200 people. And then the 21st, I'll actually be at Equinox Festival, but I believe Club Anyone are having a party. And Amy, she said, I can invite the patrons if you want a more kind of electronic-based party. And both will be good. So, yeah. Patreon.com/ you call that radio if you like the sound of any of that. But today's a special episode. It's not all about me. It's with my guest today, who's called Grasshopper, who is the singer, songwriter, guitarist of one of my favourite bands of all time, Mercurev. I started listening to them when I was about 14. And, you know, they've a few albums that are just, I mean, all their albums are brilliant, but there's about three albums that they've done in their career that I always go back to again and again. The music haunts me almost on a daily basis. Haunts me in a good way. So, yeah, I was a wee bit tongue-tied. I had so many questions. Hopefully it comes across well. But I was a wee bit nervous. We were live from Glasgow to New York, talking to one of my heroes, somebody that I listen to all the time, and I've been to many of their live performances. And they have a new album out called Horses, coming out in September. And they will play in Glasgow and the rest of the UK in November. So I've already got my ticket. I hope you guys can make it. If you're already a Mercury fans, I don't need to see any more. And if you're not a Mercury fan, then listen to this interview. Then go and check out Deserter Songs and Always Dream. Great way to start. And if you want something, if you want something a bit more psychedelic and noisy, then listen to Your Self-Esteem. And those three albums, I never stopped listening to them. And I've been listening to them since I was about 13 or something. So, anyway, it was an absolute gentleman, really interesting guy, lots of cool stories. And yeah, this is Grasshopper of Mercurev. Enjoy the show.
One, two. Yo, this is Charlie Tuna from Jurassic 5 live and direct here in Glasgow, Scotland, and you call that radio?
Call that radio. We're live with an absolute hero of mine, Grasshopper of the band Mercurev. They have a UK album out. They've got a UK tour coming up, a world tour coming up. We'll be talking about that. We'll be talking about their brand new album, Born Horses, that's available. And we'll be talking about the career, which I am a super fan of, going way back, way, way back. In fact, I've actually got some proof of how long I've been listening to the band for that I'll bring on in a little second. But let's just go live. I think New York or New York-ish. It's Grasshopper. How you doing?
How's it going? Good. Doing all right.
Are you in New York, or you said New York time? Are you in that vicinity?
I'm in New York State, but I'm in up in the Catskills.
Catskill Mansions, buried dreams. Yeah. I'm alive, she says, but I don't know what it means.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. I'm a real fan, man. I'm going to bring up proof of that, but can I just say, as an honour, it's been a long time I've been listening to your music. I think the first time I heard of you, I must have been about 12, 13. And I don't know how I heard of you, because this is before you got the fame, and because you were huge in the UK, obviously. And it was Your Self-Esteem, so either I read about it in the NME, or someone randomly shoplifted it from Aris McCall.
No, that's...
And it's... We're 12. We're 12-year-old.
Yeah, you got to do it.
And... yeah, man, I remember listening to, first of all, Chasing the Bee. I still listen to that often. That's my band, actually, we tried to kind of cover it, and I didn't think we were doing it justice. So I love Chasing the Bee. It's stuck engraved in my head. And then there was Black and Blue, which was terrifying.
Yeah. Scary.
It's a scary song. But I didn't run away from the music. I ran towards the music, and I'm glad I did, because it's some of the best music around. You've got a UK tour, you've got a world tour coming up, and a new album coming out. Let's just give that a little plug quickly, and that's Born Horses. Here is, I'll bring up the artwork. How are you feeling about the album? How's it sounding?
It sounds great, I think, you know. We worked on it for quite a while, and it's pretty, it's pretty expansive, it's pretty cinematic. Maybe theatrical. It's big. It's beautiful. We love it.
Amazing, man. And it's out on September the 6th.
September the 6th. Bella Union Records.
On Bella Union Records. And you can, I'll put the links in the comments to anyone who wants to get the pre-orders in. It's mercurev.com or bellaunion.com. The links are there. So there's no excuses. And... yeah, man, I was listening to the interview you did with, Everyone Loves Guitar? Everyone Loves Guitars?
Yeah, yes.
And he's very good. He was very good because he asked a lot of the questions that I would ask. So I realise I'm not the best, and much, much more. But I realise I'm not the best at asking questions, but I'm really good at the follow-up questions. So we'll try something a little bit different. We'll try something a little bit different. We'll talk about a Black and Blue song. It's called Outside. First time I heard that, my father, he'd been sober for years, but he kind of went off the wagon a little bit. First time in years. And my mother picked up the phone. No, I picked up the phone and he was talking to me. And she said, "How's your father doing?" And I said, "He's doing well. He's with his pal Tarzan." And she said, "That's not fine. Tarzan doesn't have a house. Tarzan lives under the shopping mall." And I was like, right. And then I listened to Your Self-Esteem, the Black and Blue, "It's Cold Outside." I was like, what a tune. What a great album. And can we go back to that? I think that's a good place to kind of start with the timeline of everything. What was going on there? What was happening before that? I'm a little bit hazy with what happened before that. I did see that you were kind of started off as like a media studies band.
Yes.
Soundtracks. Could you tell us a little bit about that, please?
Yeah. Well, I met Jonathan first, and then we started playing guitars together. And around the same time that I met David Baker, and we were in media studies in Buffalo. We studied with Tony Conrad, who had associations with the Velvet Underground. He named the Velvet Underground. He found the book, like he found the book, The Velvet Underground, laying in the subway. He brought it back to the apartment where he was actually, Tony was good friends with John Cale. Brought it back to the apartment, and Lou Reed was there, and they liked that name, so they used it, obviously. But Tony Conrad, he played with Faust. He made films. He did video performance art. He played music, minimalism with Lamont Young, and his own stuff. And so he was a big influence. We started out, Jonathan, myself, and David Baker, and then Suzanne Thorpe came in, just making soundtracks to first student films, but then some people saw some of the stuff we did, and then we, for the local TV stations and public access, and then for some Canadian television, we did some soundtracks and the music for nature shows and stuff like that. So that's what we started out doing. But then, you know, we love that stuff, but we love, you know, we love rock and roll and jazz and everything. So we started writing songs, lyrics and things like Black and Blue and Blue and Black and Blue and Black and Blue.
And then from there, it was so just correct me if I'm wrong in this timeline, but Jonathan Donahue went away to the Flaming Lips and came back for See You on the Other Side. Is that right?
Jonathan always was with Mercury Rev. It was just that we met the Flaming Lips. Jonathan booked them in Buffalo, and Wayne really got along with Jonathan and then asked him to sort of tour manage. And then he started playing with the band. And I'm the guy who knew Dave Fridman from childhood. And then I introduced Dave Fridman to all those guys. And so then the Flaming Lips took me on the road. I used to run the bubble machines and sell merch. And actually, you know, Nirvana was the opening band. So I got to sell. Kurt Cobain said, "Hey, can you sell my merch for me?" And I said, "Sure, put it up here with the rest of the stuff." So I would settle with him every night, sell T-shirts and records for Nirvana and Flaming Lips. But yeah, I mean, both Jonathan was in both bands. Concurrently running through that. And I played a little bit on Priest Driven Ambulance and stuff. I'm just credited as Sean, but I did a bunch of I did some guitars and stuff like that on there.
Amazing, man. You just mentioned like two of my favorite bands there. Aside from yourself, was Nirvana and Flaming Lips as well. Love them both, man.
Yeah.
So whereabouts is this?
This is like 1989 when I was on tour with the Flaming Lips. Jonathan started playing with them in probably like 88, 89, 90, 91. And then, but we were, at the same time, we were doing Mercury Rev, Your Self-Esteem, recording that. At the same time they were doing Priest Driven Ambulance.
And so to see you on Another Side, which another fantastic record, and not as challenging as I would say Your Self-Esteem, because when you listen to it now, I don't understand why it didn't get as commercially successful as it perhaps deserved to be. But was it just a bit too, was it just a bit of ahead of your time for something like that, do you think?
Yeah, we're always ahead of our time. That's the problem. That's the problem.
Well, your time did come, obviously, with the double back-to-back success of Zero Songs and All His Dream.
Yeah.
Both being back-to-back. And, you know, what a run that was. And, you know, I think it was an album of the year with the NME. And
yes. Like
that. And that's when the NME was hugely influential. Did you notice that influence by being written about in such glowing terms by those magazines?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, you know, I grew up in Buffalo, but we got them like a week late or 2 weeks late sometimes, but because they came out weekly. But we got Melody Maker and NME in Buffalo. Part of the reason, you know, we were so close, Buffalo is so close to Canada and Toronto and stuff. So is that there was that influence, but we had the NME and Melody Maker, and we would, in Canadian radio would play a lot of music from Europe and, you know, especially UK and Ireland and Scotland and stuff. And, you know, I saw Big Country. In a Big Country Dreams, when I was maybe like 14, 15 years old. But yeah, I mean, and like saw The Alarm, and we saw Talk Talk and the Psychedelic Furs and Echo and the Bunnymen and all that stuff. Echo and the Bunnymen were fantastic. Just at the time of Ocean, I saw him on the tour for Ocean Rain. Oh my God. It was like still one of my favorite concerts. It sounded so good, and the visuals and everything. I just remember that concert in Buffalo was one of my, you know, in my top five shows.
I don't want to put you in the spot. Can you name your other top five shows? Have you got a top five?
I mean, Sonic Youth probably during Evol, but Daydream Nation too. Sonic Youth was always great. Ramones I saw many, many times. I love the Ramones. One of my favorite concerts was the Stooges when they reformed. One of the first shows they reformed, I saw them at Roskilde. I flew to Roskilde because Mercury Rev we had that summer off. We were recording off and on. I flew and it was raining and I saw Iggy and the Stooges. And I was just like, it was like the happiest time of my life. I was soaked. People were pouring beer all over me. I was drenched. It was a downpour. But it was like so amazing. To see the Stooges. I mean, amazing. And then probably another great concert. I saw Lou Reed when I was like 16. And he was playing with Robert Quine And it was around the time of like the Blue Mask, Legendary Hearts albums. But Robert Quine is like one of the, when I saw him play guitar, that's when I started playing guitar. And when I saw like in the Bunnymen, like with Will Sargent, it was around the same time, like 1984, 83. Yeah, Robert Quine, he'd played with Richard Hell and the Voidoids, but he was playing with Lou Reed, and it was amazing, amazing.
So do you think those couple of gigs really just made you pick up that guitar? Did you make ambitions to do it before, or was it?
I did play before. You know, I played like mandolin, ukulele, things like that. That my like grandfather. I'm half Sicilian and half Polish ancestry, but a Sicilian grandfather played mandolin, and so I played mandolin. I played ukulele and stuff, but so I knew, you know, some of the, I knew the ins and outs and the ropes of it. Yeah, when I was playing, I started to play guitar around, picked up the guitar around that time when I saw those shows.
And it's such an amazing time. So what age were you when that happened then?
What's that?
What age were you when you?
Oh, what age?
Shows?
I was probably around like 17. You know, before that, I had played some drums in a punk band called the People's Front of Judea, which was named after in Monty Python. Yeah. Yeah. We were kind of like a Husker Du kind of band. And I, you know, from a young child, I played clarinet. I used to play, and like I said, I was half Sicilian, half Polish. So I play the clarinet with my Uncle Irv. He played accordion, and I played clarinet. We played polkas and a lot of polka music and stuff when I was a little kid. But yeah, I mean, then I picked up the guitar and then went from there.
Yeah, and what a run it's been, man. So the See You on the Other Side, So between your self-esteem and See You on the Other Side, what's kind of going on then? So you've got, is Jonathan back full-time, or is he still kind of?
Yeah, he's back full-time. Then we did BOCES, which was crazy, nice, beautiful, noisy album. And then Your Self-Esteem, which, I mean, not Your Self-Esteem, See You on the Other Side, which then... was kind of different and had a lot of influences of different American and European kind of music we liked, and show tunes and like Django Reinhardt and doo-wop and noise and Stooges, and we tried to like put it all into a blender and mix it all up and like see what came out.
And so in your, was it after See You on the Other Side that you started sort of running into problems?
Around, well, during See You on the Other Side, but yeah, during See You on the Other Side and afterwards.
Sort of the drink, the drugs, the rock and roll, the Spanish monasteries and sort of things like that.
Yeah. Wine, women and song.
Yeah. So too much of a good thing.
Too much, yeah.
You love too much, and you ended up in a Spanish monastery, which is quite interesting because it's like, you know, I'm in a band as well, and it's like, you know, everybody around about our age group, we're all hitting late 30s, early 40s, and it's getting to the stage where people are either choosing yoga or heroin. It seems like you've got to go one way or the other. So I call it the idea of a, you know, life can be quite hectic when you live in the city, even a Scottish city, believe it or not. So I'll call it the idea of just like going away for 6 months and just, I mean, what is it exactly you do in the Spanish monastery? Very little, or is it like work, or what is?
You do work, you do some work, like clean up everybody's, you cook, you clean up the kitchen, but you also do work, laundry, things like that. But then there's time of like meditation, time of silence of, you know, just sit there for a few hours with a vow of silence, kind of getting into your brain, thinking. And that's almost like a drug in itself when you go into your mind, into inner space instead of outer space. You experience that. But yeah, I mean, I lived down in the Lower East Side, down in the East Village. And I mean, it was easier to buy a pack of heroin, like a bundle of heroin, than it was to buy like a pack of cigarettes. Like, you know, it was like all around, it was everywhere. So, but I got away from all, I moved up here first to Poughkeepsie, and then I moved up to the Catskills, and got away from a lot of that crazy.
So obviously I know the Catskill Mansions from mainly Mercury lyrics. Sorry, I just also noticed that when an American says Mercury Rev, but I'm saying Mercury Rev.
But yeah.
Does that sound weird?
Well, I say Mercury Rev, the accent on the Rev, but then I think Jonathan kind of says like Mercury Rev, the accent on Mercury. So I don't know which way is correct. It's
Mercury,
like whatever.
Mercury Rev, that's what I say.
Mercury Rev.
Mercury Rev. I just got distracted there. What is Catskill Mansions exactly? I imagine, because obviously the Mercury Rev songs have painted these pictures of places like the Catskill Mansions and the Hudson Line, and I've never Googled it or anything. I'm just imagining it with my imagination. So both Catskill Mansions, what is that, and what is the Hudson Line?
Well, there's the Catskill Mountains, and then there's a state park, Catskills, which was, you know, it was called the Borscht Belt. It was a lot of comedians would, and musicians actually, like in the 20s, 30s, 40s, 50s, would play these resorts and try out material, which then they would record. You know, there was, like, back then, Benny Goodman or the Marx Brothers or, you know, like Abbott and Costello. A lot of comics and stuff were up here because New York City, the people would, it's about 90 minutes away. People would come up here to the Catskills for the summer because it was cooler and just to get away from the city life. And the Hudson River runs along here. But then there are a lot of Catskill mansions, which are on the west side of the river. They're all pretty much like monasteries. And on the east side of the river, they're all the mansions were... like the Vanderbilts, the Roosevelts, and people who own steel companies and all the rich, you know, kind of had mansions over there, which are all still there. You could see them all and take the tour. Come on, I'm like a Catskill Mountains tourist. No, but it's beautiful here. Yeah.
I suppose the Scottish equivalent would be when you get sick of the hustle and bustle of Kilmarnock, you get a ferry to Arran or something like that. But it does make sense. I've heard New York's a big place. It's bigger than Fife. It's huge. There's so much going on. And do you think by taking that break to the Catskills, that's what inspired what came next?
Yes. Yeah, definitely. That's what a lot, well, you know, a lot of deserter songs, the subject matter is kind of about that. The song The Hudson Line is about escape. It's not escaping, but leaving the concrete jungle and coming up state to a different place. And but a lot of the record, you know, Opus 40 is a place. That's a place that actually exists up here. In the Catskills, it's a sculpture. It's like a sculpture garden and also a performance space where they do concerts, and Sun Ra Orchestra just played there. Sonny Rollins played there. Yeah, it's a cool joint to come to.
Yeah, because the obviously there is just this calmness, this in Deserter Songs and All His Dream, that, yeah, there's a specific sound. I feel you can hear it. I think you said it in another pod, the other guy said it as well. It's like, you know, like the albums go together. It does feel like a part one and a part two. It
yeah.
You've captured a moment and a sound. I mean, were you going for a specific sound? What would you even call that sound? I struggle to explain it to someone else. I found it quite interesting when I was researching a little bit that Jonathan kind of went away and he was trying to sort of watching a lot of Disney and trying to kind of sort of like nursery rhymes type things, try to simplify things a little. But from a music point of view, what was the thoughts? Was there a plan going in, or did it just happen organically?
It kind of happened organically. I mean, we started to do some of the just branch out on See You on the Other Side and use other instruments. And that, on See You on the Other Side, there was like a lot of different like sax sections and brass and trumpets and stuff in that. Really with Deserter Songs, we really wanted to use a lot of things, mellotrons and some string sections. And, you know, it was like music we were listening to, like Chet Baker with strings or Frank Sinatra songs or, you know, even stuff like the Pogues, you know, Fairy Tale of New York and things that were a little different, a little more orchestrated and like, you know, hearkening back, not to lose the rock and roll, but also add in some of the music that we grew up with, like Dean Martin and Frank Sinatra and Chet Baker and things like that. So we were kind of like, and show tunes and stuff. So, and like Brill Building kind of stuff from New York City. So mixing all that together, was like I think it was the goal of Deserter's Animal Stream.
Yeah, and you nailed it perfectly. There was a stylistic choice, I think you said, about not bringing the distorted guitars that maybe been there. Have you got any demos anywhere of you trying those songs out with lots of distortion and stuff? Was it tried at all?
A little bit. Like sometimes, you know, there's earlier versions of Holes without the trumpet solo and things where there's more distorted like guitar solos and stuff. But then when we switched it out and kind of orchestrated it, it just gave it a different vibe. Yeah. And we were listening to a lot of like New York hip hop stuff too, like De La Soul and Tribe Called Quest, where you know, there was a lot of sample jazz stuff along with them playing. Even Beastie Boys too on like Paul's Boutique and stuff. And that was a big influence, just as far musically, just to mishmash these different things together and come up with something new.
And that's exactly what it is. It's unique. If anyone's not heard them before, Deserter Songs, Always Dream, just listen to them back to back. It takes you into another world, a dreamy. Yeah, you can hear the nostalgia, what you're talking about, show tunes, Dean Martin, Disney, you know, it is like a big melting pot of so many different influences to create something unique. And that's what the best music always is. And you've got those, at that time you had modern technology as well, and it just, yeah, it's amazing, man. What a brilliant piece of music. And now, just to go on to the newer one, so we've only heard one song so far, I believe. I've only heard one song from the new album. What kind of journey can we be expected to be going on with that?
It's pretty Technicolor and widescreen And, you know, it's continuing on with the things that we've experimented with before, but there's a I don't know, it's almost like there's parts where it's jazzy, there's parts where it's electronic and almost krautrock, and there's some of it where, you know, Jonathan sings a bunch of the songs, but he also kind of recites some of the songs, like poetically, and that's a nod to Robert Creeley, who was a beat poet and friends with Kerouac and things that we studied, both myself and mostly Jonathan studied with him in Buffalo. Also, he was teaching in when we were going to school up in Buffalo. And yeah, Robert Creeley, great American poet.
Yeah, I mean, you could always hear the beat poetry influence when, you know, songs like, is it maybe Hercules? Is that the last song?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And also, of course, Little Rhymes without doubt as well. I mean, you can hear there's always been such good poetry. I think that lyrically it's very visual. It paints pictures, it takes you to a place. And how does the writing process actually go? Let's prioritise this album for argument's sake. Did you just go into this album with a different writing process, or how does it normally go? Do you send demos to each other, or do you just turn up?
Yeah, we send demos to each other. I mean, this one was a lot. This time it was a lot more initiated. Like, Jonathan had a lot of the lyrics, and he had skeletal versions of a lot of the music, and then so we kind of went with that, and we're working with the lyrics and the poetry, and then like making the music and creating the music to fit those moods in a way that was, yeah, I mean, almost like Brecht and Weill or something, like trying to just, or movie soundtracks. Like, we always loved Blade Runner, the film Blade Runner, and the music in there and that nostalgia. So it was, you know, kind of almost like a film soundtrack or a theatrical show with Jonathan narrating it, but either singing or, you know, speaking some of the parts like Richard Burton would do. Jonathan loves Richard Burton, by the way. So, yeah.
Yeah. I'm just going to the website just now, just to, for anyone who's watching this back. So if you go to mercurev.com, you can see the Born Horses album where you can pre-order it from. And then we've got the tour dates. So let's have a wee look at the tour dates. It's a big one. So I think I heard you saying that you took a little bit of a step back. You've had children or a child, I don't know, but you've been...
Yeah, I got a couple of kids I have, yeah.
So you've been doing father stuff, so you took a little bit of a step back. So lockdown was quite good because you couldn't tour anyway.
Right.
So, but this is the first big tour for a while then?
Yeah, it's the first for a while. I mean, we went out on tour a couple of years ago. It was during lockdown. We went out on tour in the U.S. with Brian Jonestown Massacre. Oh, and Anton's is a great guy, and that was fun. But it was, you know, everybody got COVID like halfway through, so then it was like a couple of weeks got canceled in the Midwest, and then we continued on the West Coast. So it was supposed to be like 6 weeks, but we kind of did 2 weeks on the East Coast, 2 weeks on the West Coast, and we missed in the middle. Everybody got COVID except for me. I got it late, you know. I got it a couple months later.
You know, I got it last month for the first time. About a month or two months ago, I'd avoided it. My partner had it. I just somehow managed to avoid it, but
did you get it in Mexico?
No, I didn't. I didn't get it. I got food poisoning in Mexico. Sure. I got poisoned a few times in Mexico. It was for the first week, everyone was like, watch out, don't drink the ice, don't watch out for the salad because they might use the local water. And then after, don't eat the seafood. People warned me. Then after a week, I was meeting people who were from the UK or whatever, and they were saying it's fine, the food is brilliant. You're next to this beautiful sea, eat the seafood. I ate the seafood, it was brilliant. I had ice in my cocktail, it was amazing. So I just ate whatever I wanted for about a month. The food was fantastic. I was having the time of my life. And then, I don't know what it was. I don't know what it caused it. I thought it was a hangover.
Yeah, it's great. And then all of a sudden.
what's it called? Tukazuma's Revenge. Oofed. Yeah. I spent about 2 weeks mostly in a bathroom in Mexico City. But then I came back and then I was just a bit more weary, but then I got it again. It didn't put me off. What a wonderful place. And, you know, I suppose that's the beauty of touring, is you get to go to these wonderful, far-flung
places.
You're going to Australia next. Have you got friends in Australia? Is it somewhere that you look forward to going back to?
Yeah, we got friends there. And I also have family there because my grandfather came from Sicily. And
I've been to Sardinia, which is...
Oh, you've been to... Oh, nice.
It's not a million miles away from Sicily. It's an Italian island, but yeah, it's different. But I'd love to go to Sicily.
That's by then. But yeah, so I have all these cousins. So I have my grandfather's relative moved to Australia. So I have tons of cousins, and mostly they're all in Melbourne. But there's a few in Sydney and Brisbane and stuff, but mostly they're all in Melbourne. But it's great. When I go to Melbourne, they have me over and cook a great, huge, pasta, ale and pizza and everything. And it's like fantastic. So
I have one cousin
in Melbourne. Going there, but
I've never been, but I'd love to go.
Oh, yeah, you got to go. It's beautiful.
So you're going to Australia, New Zealand. I've got a couple of friends that live over there, and they went for a few months and they're not coming back. They're just like, it's too good. They're loving it in New Zealand. went for a holiday, went for the summer, and stayed. They're just staying for a lifetime. They're settled there.
Never came back.
Never came back. They're not coming back. They've said we should go and visit them. Then you're going to Ireland. So you're going to October 28th, you're going to Limerick, Galway, Cork, Dublin. So I love Ireland. You know, I've got Irish family going back. You must be fond of Ireland yourself. You must have played there a few times over the years as well.
Many, many, many times. Yes, it's great. I love Ireland. Her last name is Donovan. So, a lot of times when we play in Ireland, but my son's name, by the way, is Donovan, but he's got my last name, Makoviak. Donovan Makoviak. And my other son is Harrison. Call him Little Harry. But he, they love to go on tour and see me play. They've come to England a few times. They've come to Italy to see me play. But then it's been COVID, so hopefully they can come over this time and hang out.
So you're doing Norwich, Bristol, Newcastle, and Glasgow. And so tell us about Glasgow. You're playing The Garage, which is a good venue. And I think I seen you, the last time I think I seen you was at the Barrowlands. And of course, I think the first time I seen you was at Tea in the Park, which was a crazy time as well. So what memories, do you have any memories of playing Scotland in the past?
Tea in the Park was great. We were drinking a lot of Aftershock and Absinthe.
Woof!
Ouch.
I think everybody in the park is. It was the Aftershock era. at right about three in the
morning. That was the era. That was that era. Yeah,
it was the aftershock era. I mean, it does still exist. I just don't think anyone buys it anymore.
But
it does. It does exist.
Yeah. People couldn't take it anymore, I don't think.
Too many people had the same, the bad hangovers and just went, no, never again. Never again. Not even Iron Brew can fix that one. So it's November the 6th in Glasgow, the garage. I'll put a link to it. I've already got my tickets for it. I'm going. I bought my tickets about a week or two after it was announced. So I'm really looking forward to it. I'll definitely see you there. One thing I was wanting to ask you before you go was the Back to Mind compilation. Is the hold on, the that you did Back to Mind, Mercury Rev.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just curious because obviously I love those compilations because it gives you an insight into the artist. You know, I've got loads of them. But I was just wondering how it all works. So I can see there you've got David Bowie, you've got you've got your cells are in there, Suicide, Spaceman 3. I love Spiritualized Man, that's one of my favourites. But yeah, just I'm just looking at John Cale, of course.
Oh, yeah.
Nico, it's just like, it's great, man. I just actually just got this recently. Yes. I didn't even know he's had one. So I'm just familiarising myself. I've only listened to it all the way through once. But loving it so far. I was just wondering, I'm just curious, how does it work? I mean, is there a lot of back and forth about getting the rights? Did you have to, did you not get the rights to some songs? I'm just curious how the process works because there's lots of great artists have done a Back to Mind compilation.
Yeah, the company who does that, they kind of take care of all that. You make the list, and they get all the rights. And I don't know. I forget now. It's been some years since we did that, like 10 years or more. But they handled everything and got, you know, the rights to put everything together. So they were, you know, they just contact the artist, say, hey, can you put together a list? And I don't think there wasn't any that they didn't. That they didn't get. I think everything, you know, I picked a bunch of them. Jonathan picked a bunch, and at the time, Jeff Mercil, who was in the band as our keyboard player, he picked a few of the songs. But yeah, everything we pretty much wanted, they got on there.
Amazing.
Yeah, that is amazing.
It's amazing. I thought you would have. I was just curious, like, do you need to like, make a list of 50 songs and then you get 16? But if you go, you just get them all in a winner, that's excellent news. And I've just been listening to the first time. I don't know how this, I missed this one.
But, yeah.
The Delta Suite Revisited. So I've just started listening to that and that's a cool concept as well. How did that come about?
Which one is that? Sorry, you cut out for one sec.
Sorry, the Delta Suite Revisited.
Oh, yes. So that was the Bobby Gentry album that we did our rendition of. And, you know, she was down in the Mississippi Delta, and which is at the end of the Appalachians. We're like at the Catskills are the top of the Appalachians. So we did our take on it. And it was like a favorite record of ours that, you know, it came out when Jonathan and I were kids. Both of our parents had that record. So it was something that we had in common. And then Jesse Chandler, who plays with us, keyboards with us now, he really loved it too. So we came up with these arrangements. And then, you know, Jonathan did the scratch vocals. And I said, why don't you sing it? And he said, I really want. I think it's just better because Bobby Gentry, you know, to get female singers. So we started asking around some of the people we knew, like Jesse Chandler knew Nora Jones, and we knew Beth Orton and Letitia, and you know, we had. Oh yeah, she's really good. She's always really good. Yeah. And we always loved Lucinda Williams, and we just, you know, we didn't know her, but we just sent a letter, and she wanted to do it, so it was great. You know, I was a big fan of hers. A lot of the artists we were just big fans of, so It was great to have them work on the album.
Yeah, it's such a amazing selection of singers you picked there as well. How do you decide who does what song? Did you put it to the singers, or did you just have an idea of who you wanted to sing each song, or how did that go?
We kind of had an idea at the beginning. We kind of sent some of the people a couple of different songs to see which ones they wanted to do. But then as it got more filled up,
there was only so many songs left and so many singers.
and then we picked those. I mean, there was some other singers, but they couldn't do it at the time. You know, I think we had asked Annie from St. Vincent, but she was kind of busy during that time. And anyway, it all worked out, you know, pretty cool.
I've got AP Muse commented to say, looking through a box of older CDs to find Mercury F CDs, and so far I've got Flaming Lips, Heavy Nugs compilation, and now Sunrise Space is the place for a listen later. And he's also saying that he loves Beth Gibbons' Sonic Youth's new album, and looking forward to hearing Mercury F's album.
Thank you.
And Mary's saying, even your old mother loves Mercury F. You guys introduced music. Mercury Rockets is in the house. Hello, Mercury Rockets. Hello, Lou. And thanks to everyone who's tuned in. That's just to wrap it up one more time. Thank you so much for joining me tonight, man. This is about 45 minutes, so I don't want to take up any more of your time. The album's out September the 6th, Born Horses.
Thanks.
Get it from mercuryrev.com or bellaunion.com. And there's a full UK tour you can find on the website. But the one that I'll be at is November the 6th at the Garage in Glasgow. I'm absolutely buzzing for it. I'm looking forward to it, man.
Yeah.
Thank you so much for your time.
Yeah, we'll see you there. Come backstage, we'll do some aftershock.
Yeah, no, I'll bring you a bottle of aftershocks. No worries at all, man.
All right. Thanks for asking me to do this. It's great.
No, thank you. All right. The pleasure's all mine. Thank you very much. Yeah, that was Grasshopper from Mercury Rev, or Mercury Rev, depending on how you want to say it. We've got the audio podcast is out every Sunday, and we're doing the live streams every sort of Tuesday or Thursday just now. But you can always guarantee there'll be a new audio podcast on the Sunday. And if you're listening to the audio podcast